Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, hosted by me, Dr. John Wales. This is the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry experts. Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry experts. Today's expert is the author of the number one best-selling book, Achieving Balance, and has earned several degrees in family and social science to better understand stress and goal achievement. He founded the Make Time Institute to help financial professionals and business owners achieve balance. But more importantly, he is a homeschooling father of seven incredible children and the husband to one amazing and talented wife of 19 years. He is here to help our agencies by showing us how to achieve balance, increase productivity, and improve our decision-making and time management skills. I would like to welcome to the huddle best-selling author and speaker, Dr. Travis Perry. Welcome to the huddle.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, John.
Thank you. Can you explain to me a little bit, what is balance?
Such a good question. I actually start off every keynote with that question. What is balance? I think that we've been fed a lot of false narratives and myths around this idea of what balance is. And in fact, some of the industry experts, quote unquote, have probably helped us to continue these myths and maybe even pulled us out of balance even further while trying in vain to help us. Let me break this down. I actually think that the definition of balance is how you feel about balance when you are living your life's highest priorities. We've interviewed over 250, close to 300 advisors now here at the Make Time Institute. And in doing research for the book, Achieving Balance, we found that actually there's a correlation between advisors, insurance agents, business owners are working outside of their normal, you know, hours that they're working 50 plus, et cetera, you know, maybe 70, 80 hours or so. They're really not having the time to put in the physical exercise, fun and rec, hobbies, their spiritual life, time with their family. And it's creating a lot of stress or cognitive dissonance because in their mind, they actually know that's where they would like to be spending. But they get caught up in this workaholic trap and they're not able to really make the time to be in those highest priorities of their life.
How do we balance that? I would love to do more things with my family. I would love to do more things in my hobby, but I have a tremendous workload. And sometimes I feel like I'm spinning 10, 11 plates on sticks, trying to keep everything upright at the same time. How do we get out of that trap? And how do we make time for the additional joys of life rather than just working all the time?
Yeah, great question. So this is myth number one. Myth number one is doing it all will equal balance somehow. Well, I think that you can do your highest priorities even at work. I call this your work sweet spot. These are your five or six activities that make you the most money, but then also are most fulfilling, right? And there's a formula that I use in the book, Achieving Balance, where I help you break this down. But this work sweet spot, you know, these five or six main activities, if you're spending 80 to 90% of your day in your sweet spot, you're feeling excellent. You feel great at work. For advisors, insurance agents, it's, you know, working with clients, getting new clients, prospecting for those new clients. It's typically those three or four, doing maybe some high level prep. But most everything else, maybe the low level prep, the underwriting back and forth, the travel time, emails, like I can name just a bunch of distractors and time wasters and even things that are lower priority. You're spending a lot of your time there. The sad part is, most advisors and insurance agents, they're spending probably 25 to 30% of their time in their sweet spot. That is why they are struggling so much and why you probably, John, feel like, gee, I spent this long day at work and I should have accomplished all these things, but you actually feel unfulfilled, which is very interesting because the definition of a workaholic is someone who works more yet feels unfulfilled at work. It's an addictive cycle. And I found that a lot of advisors and insurance agents that are stressed out tend to work more because it's one thing they think they can control. So you run around trying to spin all the plates. And that's really the first myth of balance is again, trying to do everything at the same time for everyone without actually working in the most productive area of work time.
That description fits me perfectly. I will work sometimes 18 hours a day trying to do everything. And I may cross off a lot on the task list, but I feel like no matter how many hours I work per day, no matter how many things I cross off on my task list, that there are still more tasks being added to it than I can accomplish.
Part of that is organization. Part of that is something that I call processing. We tend to try to multitask, right? We start a project. We're like, I need to work on this underwriting, you know, project, or I need to, you know, do some marketing. And then we get interrupted by an email or a pressing phone call. Like, oh, I need to take this, right? So you stop that and you start the other thing. And quite honestly, 20 to 30% of the problem that we have of slipping into this workaholic trap is just starting, stopping, restarting activities throughout the day. If we could be focused and have specific time blocked out to do various items that should be 80% of it, right? 90% of it in your work, you know, sweet spot, then you're going to be golden. But I think a lot of advisors, insurance agents, and, you know, they don't operate like business owners. They operate sometimes like a, you know, a glorified salesperson who really is struggling to do those most important things. And they get distracted by these lower priorities, oftentimes because they want to give the appeal to their clients that I'm here for you, man. Call me whenever, email me, you know, and I will take care of you. Now, that's great. You want to have that client relationship, but you need to build a team. You need to have help. You need to delegate those things that really aren't in your sweet spot to someone else who can do it in theirs.
That is one of the common failures that I see in the insurance and financial professional industries, is that when we open an agency, we are thinking it more as a way to either replace income or build income, or we think we're creating our own job, when in reality, we need to be focusing in on creating a business. We should be creating a business, not necessarily a job for ourselves. And that's, I know it. That sometimes I get lost in that.
Yeah. And you know, that's the whole E-myth. Michael Gerber wrote the book E-myth, and he doesn't know me, but I consider myself his grandson because one of his first coaches, Dave Crenshaw, who wrote the book, The Myth of Multitasking, which I was kind of describing there, that idea, he wrote that book and then he trained me on productivity. Now, listen, John, productivity is great, but the second myth of balance is that when you become super productive, if you don't have boundaries to keep it all in place, then you're likely, likely to become what I deem a productive workaholic. Okay, this is someone who's super good at getting stuff done. They're ultra productive, but they're still going to work the 60, 70 hour weeks because they can't seem to break away. I had a client who, before working with me, was saying that, gee, he was only getting home for family dinner with his two kids and his lovely wife 4 times a month because of some of the choices he was making with his calendaring. All right. And that's the struggle. Is myth number two is that productivity is the magic pill. We're Americans. We want it fast. We want it yesterday. We want it in pill size, don't we? So this is probably one of the allures to, I just need to be more productive. Well, it's true. That is a step. And you should be more productive. You need to have processing. You need to be organized. Like I was saying, you need to have a system in place so that you can keep, you know, yourself working in your highest areas. However, if you do not have boundaries, meaning personal boundaries, this is when I leave work. This is my actual work time. This is when I'm going to be with my family. This is when I'm working out. This is when I'm going to church or reading scriptures, whatever it is that you do to spiritually enable yourself. This is what I'm doing for my hobbies. I'm going to do something for myself. I just had a client yesterday say, Travis, I really, really struggle with this idea of putting down on paper the things that I want to do for myself because I never make time for it. That's just the issue. If you don't enjoy life outside of work, what motivation do you have to stop working? If you don't enjoy those family relationships, you know, working out and doing something fun for yourself, et cetera, typically that's not gonna keep you from becoming that productive workaholic. But if you have that in place, you have an ideal calendar that includes the personal side of you, then you've created the boundaries that's gonna help you to become a balanced advisor.
I think that's helpful because I know for me, when I'm planning my calendar, I'm not very good at setting boundaries, but if a client calls me after hours and needs something, I may think I have boundaries, but am I really holding to them? And then right. I end up feeling, okay, if I'm not doing everything for my clients and for my company, and I want to do something for me, there's that little voice in the back of my head that says, well, you know what? You're kind of being selfish.
Right.
And I think you bring up a good point. Maybe every now and then we do need to be a little bit selfish and focus in on our self-care.
This is a big topic that, you know, I have some very strong opinions on. You just have to make the time for the things that are super important to you. However, you know, this brings me to myth number three. Anything taken to an extreme can become an issue. And so I see a lot of advisors who, it's kind of an evolution. Like, oh man, I'm a workaholic. And they wear it as a badge of courage for a while. And then they realize, this is actually a problem. This is causing me to be out of balance, overweight. My relationships are struggling. And so they try to become productive and they kind of go through that evolutionary process. And then they realize, well, gee, I just need to make time for myself. It's all about me. Well, taken to an extreme, even that point, John, which I agree, you do need to have some of that in your schedule. But the reality is it becomes more of myth number three, which I call, you know, the myth of personal development. Personal development is important. You need to have the personal time, but you don't need to do it alone. The personal development field is a $56 billion industry. Okay. Well, Travis, you wrote a book, aren't you? Personal development. Yes. But I've created a process that allows people to not, you know, to go further than personal development into what I call couple development and even family development. If you think about workaholism as an addiction, which the DSM-5, you know, where psychiatrists and psychologists will diagnose you if you get to that point, right? They basically, you know, see this as an addiction. Then most addiction, look at alcohol, drug addiction, pornography, whatever it is for you or issues that other people may have, as you see in society, addictions are rarely, if ever, solved on one's own, right? That's why people go to AA. You know, hello, I'm Travis and I'm a workaholic, right? That's how we should be starting these things. But those who do really well, who get through addiction and at least can keep it at bay, have a supportive spouse, supportive family, supportive friends. And that's really what we need to obtain balance. Yes, we need the personal development, but couple development needs to be there as well.
How would you recommend that we get out of this trap without feeling like we're failing our clients, like we're failing our business when we focus in on our family? Because I will tell you, I will spend time with my family and inevitably the phone call will come in from the office and say, hey, we have this emergency going on. How do we set those boundaries? How do we stick to them? And how do we make that part of our new persona as we're changing? So for those of you who are familiar with addiction programs, the cure to addiction is basically to want something more than what you're addicted to. And that creates a lifestyle change.
That's right.
How do we facilitate that lifestyle change when it comes to making our livelihood?
The very first exercise that I have in the book and in my coaching and in my events that I do all around the country with advisors is to dive really, really deep. I was an insurance agent and financial advisor with Northwestern Mutual. When at the age of 26, my father, who was then 49, died of a heart attack on his mountain bike. He was not one of these couch potatoes who was unhealthy, and you know, he was very fit and wasn't something expected. Totally took us by surprise. That said, he was my very first death claim. Right, I've been in the business for 4 years as an agent. I never saw the end of, you know, some of the planning that went on, and it just happened to be my own father. That really put a lot of pressure and stress and strain on me and my family. And, you know, just initially, since I was the advisor and I was the oldest son, a lot of responsibility fell on my shoulders because my mom was a total mess, as anyone would suspect after 26 years of marriage and a very great relationship, to have her husband gone like that. So I had to really pick up all the pieces. I submitted the death claim. I paid off my mom's mortgage. I paid off all of her cars. I set her up on a spending plan. I invested the money so that she'd have something for long-term, helped her buy a new home and relocate her life. You know, and in the middle of all that, I was also asked to, you know, help out to buy the casket and take care of the funeral arrangements and get everybody situated. And one night I sat down and realized, well, gee, no one else is doing this. I better do this too. And that was right, the mini obituary. So here I'm talking about not doing everything, right? And yet I was tasked with all of these things all at once in a matter of a couple of weeks. As I was writing the obituary for my father, it was a life-changing experience. And I realized, goodness, Travis, your dad accomplished and became something really amazing. And he really did live his life on purpose. You're 26. If you only had till age 49, what are you going to do with your life? Now, part of it is I wanted to be healthier. And so I went and saw the doctor and I got all these tests, and we've totally changed our health. We live plant-based. We eat very clean, like super fit and active. And you know, I'm hopefully going to live to 120, right? But God willing, who knows, right? But if the time that I have was only to age 50, which my dad was 2 weeks short of his 50th birthday, 3 weeks short of his 50th birthday, then gee, you know, what do I have with that life? I'm now 41. I've accomplished and achieved a great many things, but more importantly, I'm trying to become that person that I really need to become in all areas of life. So in chapter one, after the intro, which I talk about that story in more depth, chapter one, we break down how to write your own obituary. Now, this is an exercise that many other, you know, thought leaders and authors have discussed, but no one's ever done it in these specific 10 areas of life, and breaking it down by characteristics so that these can become lifelong goals and motivation. Because in order to really get past addiction, like you said, John, you really have to have something greater than you, and you really have to have this internal motivation that is very much lacking for those. It's there subconsciously, but it's not pulled out. And once you go through this exercise, this, you know, this is probably the most important thing that anyone does that picks up the book. If they can do that one thing, it likely has an impact to change them and motivate them to go through the rest of the book, do the exercise, get organized, create an ideal calendar, have your spouse and family help keep you accountable forever.
I think many of us are really good at planning our calendars. We're good at writing goals down. We're good at focusing in on one or two goals, most of the time sales goals. But when we're setting a calendar and we're setting boundaries, what is the best way to stick to them? I know it's easy just to say no. Say no. That's a magic word. No. We hear it from the time we're 1 year old. No. But for some reason, that is so hard for especially smaller agents and agencies to say. We tend to accept clients we shouldn't be accepting because we don't want to say no. We tend to overburden our staffs because we don't want to say no. And we tend to overburden ourselves because we don't want to say no. Other than saying, okay, it's simple, just say no. What are some, you know, we have that fear that saying no will either cost us money or reputation or may harm our business. How do we overcome that fear of saying no and setting those boundaries?
You're so spot on, John. I have a podcast that I developed after writing this book. I actually had a different podcast. It was kind of going a different direction, but I wrote this book and it was so impactful on this industry, really financial advising and insurance industries, that I realized, gee, it's time to really get this out here and interview other people of how they're struggling, what they're doing. And one of the number one things that come up is delegation, delegation, delegation. Well, what is truly the underlying part of that? You mentioned some fear of letting go of things. And a lot of that is, yeah, it's this control. Oh, I do it better than anybody else. Nobody can do it as good as me, right? That is probably one of the best lies we tell ourselves. Because you look around in the industry and there's so many people doing a great job. You might have a great process. You might have a good idea. And you know, maybe the clients really like you. And that's all important. But in order to scale your business, in order to get to the next level, you've got to eventually, you know, hire assistant advisors, assistants, have a team. I was in the business, right around the time my father passed away. I had already hired, I'd only been in this for a couple of years, and I already hired three on my team. I had a part-time marketing person, I had a full-time underwriting specialist and client specialist, and a full-time paraplanner. and I knew that if I could delegate and get rid of these things as fast as I could, and I could just do the things that I like doing, fantastic. That's wonderful. You know, I might be really good at working with the clients. So I would go golfing, I'd take them to lunch, I work with my clients, and I'd take the pair planning examples from the input that the assistant did, and I would fine tweak and tune the plans before I'd give it to the clients, but I would do everything. I got over that fear of I can do it as, you know, better than anyone else, because I do believe that there are so many great and talented people out there who do things way better than I can. If I can find them and hire them to do a better job at something that is not in my work sweet spot, then that's it. So, John, back to that idea, if you struggle with that, it's likely you have two kinds of fears. You have a fear of failure or a fear of success, or maybe a mix of both.
Starting to wonder if that might not even be ego-driven, you know?
Of course.
Not only are we afraid of it, but we have to prove to ourselves and to those around us that we can do everything and that we are the best of everything. So I wonder how much our ego is getting involved with that, because no offense agents out there, but we know most of the agency owners out there, we have an ego. If we didn't have an ego, we would be working for someone else.
Well said. Well said. And that ego, you know, I have a master's degree in psychology. We've dissected this idea of ego and superego. Okay. There's even a concept called superego. And the ego is kind of like this tip of the iceberg. Like superego is even worse. But most of that comes from various fears. And in chapter 14 of the book, I break those down and talk about maybe a fear of failure because you're like this, maybe fear of success like that. But in reality, we have some kind of combination, but typically one dominates. We were talking about ego. Even ego is fear-driven, John. Even ego is, well, I don't want people to think that I'm going to be a failure, so I'm going to overachieve, right? That's part of that fear of failure. And I'm not going to break down every fear, but some of that is the conscious mind saying to the subconscious, oh yeah, you think you've got me on this fear part? Well, I'm going to prove it wrong. So I'm going to prove you wrong. So they're actually using fear as the motivation. Now, what we know about fear as a motivator is it's very short term. You tell your children, you better clean up your room. You know, you're not going to get dessert or whatever. Okay. So that's fear driven and it'll only last short term. But if you teach your child about cleanliness and about how to organize and the beauty of knowing where everything is over time, they will love that. And that love is the greatest motivator. I'm getting touchy-feely here, John, but if we apply that to business and work, you know, what is that for us? How do we get past and out of our own way, right? Well, we've got to get past our fears. And probably number one is discover, what is my fear? And that, again, clearly written out in chapter 14 of the book. And happy to, I spend most of my day, quite honestly, helping advisors get past their fear, get past their ego, so they can apply the things that I teach.
One of the things that I think would help is if we had a set framework of accountability, not only for our staff, but we can say, okay, staff, this is what I'm going to hold you accountable for, and this is what I'm going to hold you accountable to do. And in return, I'm going to hold myself accountable. I think that would be a good, if we can get that framework of accountability and training and development, instead of trying to do everything, try and repurpose that time into developing others so that I would have the ability and comfort level to delegate.
100%. I literally, right before this podcast, was in a hiring interview for a chief of operations for the Maytime Institute. We're growing so fast. We've doubled what we did last year. We doubled last year what we did in 2019. We're just continuing to grow. Well, I know that this is a huge need for the industry as a whole, and many advisors and insurance agents hire me to help them. But the reality is, when I hire someone, I am hiring for abilities, skills. They can learn skills. They can learn how to apply their ability to a software, to a process, to something that we have them do, and we can train them. But I hire abilities, and I do some searching, and I talk to them first, and I do some preliminaries. And then I usually have a 90-day period where we test those abilities. Okay. And that's usually a 90-day working interview. And yeah, they've got a job, they're getting paid. And after 90 days, we reevaluate where they're at. And did their abilities really match up to what the expectations were? Do we need to shift this role, or, you know, are we just still going to work together? I really love that, because the interviewee said to me, I really love this because, you know, this is just a piece of paper I'm holding in my hand as my resume, and I don't really get a chance to prove my abilities, and you're giving me that chance. And in the meantime, I'm getting someone who I'm training, who's also, by the way, well, Travis, you might say, well, be careful. You know, if you lose that person, then you're gonna have to train again. Well, no, what I do is any new position is, as I train them, we save all the training. We have technology that allows us to do this. I use Loom or Screencast-O-Matic or whatever, and we record the screen, we record what we're doing, and I have them build a manual. So if they ever had to leave or had to give 2 weeks notice, we'd have time to make sure that that training is ready to go, and that person can really train the next person. You know, heaven forbid there's a real major issue and they quit or whatever, which I've never actually had happen. Just how we've been able to run this. They know that it's their responsibility to have that ready to go, to hire the next person or to advance into another position, and we can hire their position. It's just a mindset shift. Of leadership. And I, you know, it's balanced leadership. It's allowing you to be balanced, and it's allowing you to not have that fear of letting go of these activities that you do so well.
One of the things I've realized that if I hire somebody and I work truly on their development, not just job skills, like you said, I can teach anybody how to push a key on a computer, but actually developing them as a person and increase their abilities in that position, I have very high retention. Very few people, if you've invested into them, will withhold from investing back into your company or back into you.
Right. That's right.
As we're talking about overcoming fear and setting the boundaries, how could that help us improve our decision-making and time management skills? And how does that impact our emotional relationship to setting goals and our values?
You know, I think it's the payoff. As I've worked with so many advisors, those are the ones that do set their boundaries, and they live their ideal calendar, which is really what I'm helping them do. Essentially, I'm helping them live their life on purpose, not reactive, but very purposeful. Thought about calling the book, you know, Live Life on Purpose, but it was too esoteric. I wanted to be more specific. And I'm glad I did, because I could take this term balance and really blow it up and say, yeah, there's a ton of myths here. And I could have called it the myth of balance, but there's too many myths, right? We've got to really make this work. But once clients build these ideal calendars and they keep those boundaries, and what happens is, and any psychologist will tell you, is that you create these habits, right? And as you create these habits, it is a constant hit to your psyche. And it could be in various different ways. It could be, you know, the adrenaline rush. It could be dopamine, right? That says, hey, great job. It could be as you're working out, you know, you have hormones that are released in your body that tell you, great job, you're working me out, right? It's the same thing. It's these repeated procedures over and over that as you create this habit, as you work your new ideal calendar, you start to feel balanced. And as you have that balanced feeling, you don't ever want to lose it. In fact, I help a lot of advisors who want to scale their practice even further. Once they get out of the workaholic trap, they're like, this is a whole new world. But now they want to scale what they've created in their business. And now they're afraid. Some of them are afraid that I don't want to go back to living an unbalanced life just because I scaled my business. So we actually help them to scale their practice while keeping their balance. And it's a process that I've been able to, you know, double our business over the last few years, every single year. But I think it's that payoff, John. It is that that psychological, you know, feeling of balance that once they start to achieve it, they don't ever want to let it go.
That makes a lot of sense. And matter of semantics here, can you tell us, what is the difference between a goal and a value?
Such a good question. So I really look at when you've created your mini obituary in chapter one, and we talk about this, that you identify what your values are. And those values are really characteristics of who you want to become, or who God wants you to become, or who, you know, you want your friends to think of you when you've passed. So as you think about those values, they describe you, not necessarily what you've done. On your tombstone, people don't have a resume of what they've done. Even, you know, okay, maybe exceptional, some famous people, whatever. But the reality is, it's usually the type of person they've become, beloved father, husband, you know, et cetera. And because of that, you know, that's really where the focus needs to be, is on what we are becoming. And so values direct us. They are principles that guide our life. And any financial advisor and insurance agent knows financial planning 101 says you really need to understand your client's values. What do they want? What do they value, right? When it comes to, you know, protecting their families or providing for their future income. That is financial planning 101. So this really does lock and sync what we, you know, have been taught in the industry. But personally, do we have values in every one of our areas of life? If you do, I consider those, John, long-term, lifelong goals. The goal is becoming. The goal is not achieving or doing. It's becoming. And once you have that mindset, then you can say, well, gee, if I want to become a trusted leader in the community, what can I do this year? What goal can I set? What benchmark can I put out there for this year that will stretch me to become a trusted leader in the community? Well, maybe I should start that nonprofit to help homeless people. Fantastic. Is that your goal for that year? Wonderful. Or it's a project to help your church renovate of someone's home or something. That is a goal. A value is a lifelong objective to becoming someone that you want to becoming.
The last thing I would want on my tombstone is to say he sold insurance.
Right. I don't know why that just brings up some bad memories of some movies in the late 80s. But anyway, I'm with you.
So, Travis, as we start winding down here, what are some of the high level points that we have talked about in this podcast that you would like our listeners to retain?
If nothing else, to know the definition that balances living your highest priorities. At work, the make time method really goes like this. You become super productive, ultra productive at work, and you save the time that you would normally be wasting, spending, doing on other lower priorities, and invest it into those personal things that really are your other highest priorities. I've never met a man or woman with children who has told me that career is their number one priority in life. Never. I've met others who have said, yeah, career is number one, but they're typically not married or have children. They know the value of being a father, husband, wife, mom, to children and to their spouse, and having that relationship. Also their own physical health, their spiritual health, those tend to be, you know, top two or three. And so really what we're looking at is time to connect with God, time to connect and work out our own body and keep physically healthy, but also these close relationships to us, right? So that said, the mini obituary will really help you as you set that to know objectively how you can begin to make those changes in your life. Create an ideal calendar that then helps you to keep boundaries and be productive at that work, right? So to keep that, save time there, but then invest it outside of work. Enjoy life. Live life to the fullest. Live life on purpose. Again, this is not hyperbole. There is a plan, a way to do this. So that when people, 1500 people show up at your funeral, like they did for my dad, they can know that, man, that was a man who became something that he knew he needed to become. That's my goal. That's my wish for everyone listening to this. I know it's super soft and cuddly and emotional, but you know what? That's truly end of life. Most people, they look back on those relationships, who they touched, how they influenced, what is their legacy going to be like. I think insurance agents really get this because you're helping people put together that legacy in case they leave this life too early. And I think that should be a part of what you even help your own clients do. Help them look at their own life. Help them to see their life in this similar view of what are they doing? What is their purpose? And if you can do that, you can connect with your clients at a super deep level. And it's not only going to help them, but it's going to help build these relationships. But it'll help you as you strive toward it and create this accountability team that will enable you really to fulfill it and to stay out of the workaholic trap for good.
Thank you, Travis. And if our agents would like more information about you and your book, how can they get a hold of you and how can they purchase a copy of your book?
Right now, they can go to achievingbalancebook.com. And you know, there's the paperback, the audio, and we're bringing out the hardback soon. But they've got all that. Obviously, you can jump on Amazon. You can pick it up. We've got a cheaper bundle deal. We'll send you the book for free. Just pay the shipping. And you can pick up the audio, I think, for right now for $20 total together. So it saves them a few dollars. I've also got a bunch of bonuses there. Some videos on how to clear out your email inbox, how to set up, you know, your ideal calendar even faster. But also if they're interested and if they want to take some time with my team and they want we call a make time discovery call to try to figure out where are they struggling? Is it myth one, two, or three? Where is the biggest issue that they're really dealing with? And really dig into their fears and the psychological component. That's also offered there on the Achieving Balancebook.com website. If you want to learn more about me and connect with me, I'm on LinkedIn. You can connect with me on my website. I've got the podcast at TravisPerry.com. You can learn more about us there.
That's it for this edition of the Insurance Huddle. We'll see you next time. In the meantime, be sure to check out our Facebook page and Medium blog, linked in the description box down below, for more great resources. This podcast has been brought to you by CoverWallet for Agents, the easiest way for insurance agents to quote, bind, and service their small business clients. All online and in minutes. Check us out at CoverWalletForAgents.com.